Hey guys, how you doing? It's Coach Treggs here, the founder of 30 Plus Men's Fitness, and I hope you're all doing great. Guys, I've been a little bit, slack with the podcast in the last month. Life has been chaotic, but it's no excuse, and I always know it's time to do one when people start calling me out inside the free online global community. One thing I ought to say is, guys, sometimes when I'm trying to talk to people from America and that, trying to make it happen with the time difference, it's quite difficult. But today, that doesn't matter. The time difference doesn't matter. I'm joined with somebody who's actually sat virtually with me. He's from sunny Scotland. This guy is really blowing up on Facebook at the minute with his infographics. And he's also blowing up over on Instagram with his infographics. No-nonsense, bullshit approach. Really, really refreshing. And lots of people talking about him. I'm sat with Scott Baptie. How are you, Scott?
Hey, mate, thank you for inviting me on your show. It's a great privilege. God, that's starting to speak.
It's honour or privilege.
It's a garbled mouthful.
It's really nice to speak to a Scotsman, because we've got a big following in Scotland with our online programmes, and we did for a while have a very successful boot camp up in Glasgow, which unfortunately we had to close just due to staffing issues. But I've spent many a weekend in Glasgow, and I have to say, you Scottish folk are very accommodating. I always have a great time when I'm up there.
Oh, well, we try our best. maybe not so friendly when we're playing you guys at football. We'll leave that one out for just now.
Excellent, dude. Tell us, whereabouts exactly are you in Scotland?
So I'm up in Aberdeen, which is up on the northeast coast.
Sure.
So the oil capital of Europe, as they call it.
And how is the weather up there currently, dude? Because we're having a heat wave in Wales.
Normally we'd use pish to describe it, but actually it's been quite nice. Can't complain.
Pish.
We're two jackets rather than three.
Pish is a word that I picked up on my travels in Glasgow, along with wee dancer and bull bag. Bull bag was used a lot up there.
And you don't want to fanny about either. That's another one.
Awesome, dude. All right, so Scott, I said to you a little bit before we started recording. My followers are generally, you know, working class, busy, over 30s men with families, kids, careers, out there earning a crust to provide for their families. They might be listening to this in their truck where they're driving up and down a motorway. They might be listening to this in the office at work. They might be listening to this when they're out on a run or a walk, right? They may not have as close an eye on fitness as others, okay? So for those that haven't heard of you, they're not following on Instagram or Facebook, and don't worry, you're going to get a lot more followers after this. Who are you, my friend?
Okay, so I'd say I was a sports nutritionist by trade. Got a master's in sports nutrition, but I'm generally working with everyday folks who want to lose a bit of body fat, get leaner, get a bit stronger, all the good stuff, general aesthetics and improved health and well-being. And
yep.
I'm doing that via a few different methods, doing it online, working with clients one-on-one there. I do a podcast like you. I write for quite a few of the different fitness magazines. I'm often on the radio. So, yeah, I'm trying to get all over the place and just, like you said in the intro, just cut out the amount of bullshit there is surrounding healthy eating and fitness, because it's super confusing and folk are hearing one thing about, you know, what not to eat,
yeah,
or they've got to suddenly eat, you know, 10 portions of this and they can't have a beer and, oh,
yeah,
this is bad for them. And it does my nut in, and it's really frustrating for people. So most of the time I'm telling them about the things they don't need to worry about.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you don't need to worry about gluten unless you've got an intolerance, or no, you don't need to stop eating carbs after six, just eat whenever fits your day. And it's, yeah, trying to get that sense of balance and show people that they can get in great shape and eat well and lose weight or build muscle or whatever without it taking over their life.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my goal.
Okay, well, I mean, we'll really sort of touch on all those subjects as we get into it, my friend. But so tell us a little bit about, I mean, you're 31, right? That's why you only just qualified to come on. You know, if you were 29, I'd have said you had to grow a beard and maybe lie about your age. But you just qualify. So tell us how you actually got into the fitness industry. Were you into health and fitness as a youngster, or did you just sort of fall into this career some other way?
Yeah, no, I always did sport as a kid. Played a lot of badminton, golf, everything, cycling, all that kind of stuff. And then went to uni with the goal of quote unquote getting a proper job. So my idea of that was, you know, sitting at a desk and wearing a shirt and tie and all this. And sure. I don't know why I thought that was the right thing to do, but anyway, at the time I did. So started working in project management, realized it wasn't for me. So I set up what was at the time a blog called Food for Fitness, which is now my business. And at that time I was just posting about workouts and recipes and, you know, fat loss sure. tips and bits and pieces like that as a hobby. And then that led to people saying, you know, oh, can you do me a meal plan? And then their friend said, oh, I'll give you 50 quid if you can do me a meal plan. And it kind of grew from there. Yep. And so I thought, God, there's actually something going here. So I went back to uni, did my master's sports nutrition, set the business up, went part-time doing project management, but that only lasted two months, sacked that in, went full-time, and now I've got a team of five of us and, yeah, work with people all over the world. So absolutely love it. But, yeah, it wasn't – I knew I wanted to get into this sort of fitness and somehow, but yeah. I wasn't sure exactly how. But, yeah, I absolutely love what I do.
So you did personal training for a small period of time, right?
No, I've never trained anybody in the gym one-on-one in my life.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it seems to be that most online trainers, I think – start off doing, you know, earning their crust in the gym, and then they move on to online coaching. But it wasn't necessarily the fitness side of things or the, you know, the programming, the training plans. It was more the nutrition that I was interested in. So, you know, we went straight off with a mixture of doing online nutrition plans and also working with people one-on-one in Aberdeen. So they'd come and meet us, yeah. and we'd do their body composition yeah. and chat through how they can, you know, what they're going to do, and then meet them up again a few months later. And yeah, so it was, no, I've never done any PTA.
Sure. Okay, so let me ask you this. How rapidly has it grown in the last couple of years since you set up?
I mean, if you look at social media, so now I've got combined reach of, it's about 110,000, which compared to some people, it's nothing, but, you know, it's fairly good.
Good going, man. It's good numbers.
Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. Podcast has had just under 1 million downloads.
Nice.
I mean, it does really well, and it's provided me the opportunity to have a lifestyle which I really enjoy, and I'm able to be quite selective with the things yep. that I do now, and don't take on stuff, jobs that I don't want to do, and really just focus on the things that are going to help me reach the most amount of people. And yeah, it's good. It's all good.
So let me ask you this. When you first started out, what was the platform that you were mainly pushing yourself on?
Facebook.
Facebook.
If it wasn't for Facebook, I probably wouldn't be in the position I am. But when I started on Facebook, that was before the wee algorithm came in and you could get a huge amount of reach. And I started out as well working closely with Maxi Muscle. So we did this thing called the Lean Files,
yep.
which was when I was still working in the office, that was like a 12-week transformation thing. We blogged about it and they gave me a lot of exposure for it. And that really helped build up my following. And then we did that second time called like the Ultra Lean Files. And yeah, it was that project. And so it's quite interesting because some people, you know, I meet them at fitness expos and stuff, like, oh, I remember you from back in the Lean Files yeah. days. So that was it back then, yeah.
You talk about Facebook, and I mean, I'd agree exactly the same as you. You know, Facebook really has changed. We've gone off on a tangent already, but Facebook's really changed. It's changed the world, as we know. But when I took my business online and I started to actually sell online in end of 2012, I don't want to go and say it was easy, but looking back, it almost was, because now, you know, you've got to pay to boost to your fans. You can do a normal status update and barely get any reach, even though you've got like 20 or 30,000 fans. But I remember back then, I'd only have to put up like one status update about like a new plan, and boom, you'd be just like making sales off Facebook. It was crazy. But you know, now everybody's doing it. It's got that little bit tighter, and you've got to pay to play. You know, you've got to run ads and retarget and all that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, the advantage of it is still you can get your message in front of exactly the yeah. right kind of person that you want. So I've never paid for advertising anywhere other than Facebook.
Yeah. No, I've never gone down the road of Instagram ads. But yeah, let's not start talking about ads yeah. because this is we could talk about ads off film, because this is a fitness. So tell me, Scott, about this team that you've put together. How did that happen? Are they all based in Scotland or are they based around the world? How does that work? Because you've got a team of five fully working with you online, right?
So I've never gone out externally to hire people. They've always been like one of the guys. So Louise, who works for me, I went to school with her. Jono, I've known him for the last like 10 years. Neil is one of my mates, best mate. And yeah, and I've had other people work for me as well. And it's all just been through friends of friends. So being able to build up that really informal sort of trusting relationship. It's not like boss and employees. But yeah, they're based. Well, Jono's now in Sweden, and yeah, Neil's in Aberdeen, and yeah, we've had Kaylee, she used to be down in Bristol, and Laura was in London. So yeah, it's kind of all over the place. But that's the advantage of being online.
Excellent. Okay, so look, let's get into the fitness and nutrition side of things. Tell us a little bit about your methodology. Okay, what your message is. You did touch on it a little bit at the start, but I want to get into it a little bit deeper now. And so, you know, I remember 5-6 years ago, if you'd have come and spoke to me before I became a dad, I was paleo. I was like, you know, really sort of lower carb as possible. CrossFit, you have to do CrossFit or it doesn't count. And my opinion on many things has totally changed now. And I think as coaches, and I'm seeing a lot of coaches, a lot of my peers, people like Phil Learney, who I spoke to, all coming out and saying that they've evolved. And you only know what you know, right? And your message changes over time due to what you know. So tell me a little bit about what your message was initially when you got into the industry, and maybe how it's changed and developed as you have as well.
Oh, massive. I mean, yeah. A few of the things that you just said resonated. So yeah, I've done paleo. I thought for a while I was lactose intolerant. I followed advice from like the big dudes. If that guy's massive, then he obviously knows what he's talking about, yeah. Even though this person with the PhD is saying they're wrong because they don't look like they lift. Obviously, the bigger guy knows what he's talking about. You know, yeah. That kind of thinking that knowledge or somebody's size or physique was indicative of what they knew, which is just nonsense. I also, like snappy headlines, and I used to follow stuff in the magazines. And supplement-wise, God, I used to take everything, like glutamine because somebody said it. But I used to just take stuff on face value without actually looking into it and thinking, right, I know everybody says you've got to take a protein shake within 30 minutes, but why? So some of the stuff that I used to...
Anabolic window, bro.
And it's like far too much protein again, not knowing exactly why I'm taking it. I mean, I'm not afraid, like you said there, to put your hand up and say, some of the stuff I did before was absolute nonsense. I've now evolved, and that's not, at the time I thought that was the right thing to do, and it's not. So some of the messages that I'm putting out just now, 5 years down the line, when new evidence and research comes out, I might say, okay, at the time I thought BCAAs weren't worth it, but now there's some new evidence suggesting that maybe they are. So yeah, again, go with the volume of evidence. But yeah, it's changed a lot.
I mean, I've been on courses, and I'm not going to name names because a lot of those courses did teach me a lot of things. But looking back now, when you're being told that, you know, chemicals and toxins are bad for you, and, you know, don't use microwaves and be careful putting a mobile phone to your ear because that can cause cancer and all this kind of thing, you come away and, you know, I've always been very enthusiastic about what I do and my message. And, you know, looking back, I see, like, you know, when Facebook memories pops up stuff and you're like, fuck, was I really talking about detoxing and not using microwaves and don't drink Diet Coke? You mustn't drink Diet Coke. And it's funny because I've just queued up a post for tonight, which is going to cause some controversy, but I've been enjoying the odd Diet Coke of late, especially in this heat. And I just put this whole post up saying, you know, I was wrong about diet drinks. And I'm expecting a little bit of a backlash. But I think that, you know, one of my guys who advises me with the online stuff says you should be controversial. That gets you more of a response. And, you know, the whole diet drink thing, I preached for years that don't go near diet drinks. And that came from me when I was overweight and before I became a personal trainer, basically living off Diet Cokes. And so obviously that association came, well, I was overweight, I wasn't fit, must have been the Diet Cokes, right? Wasn't the fact that I was completely overlooking that I wasn't training enough and I was probably overeating as well. And then, you know, when you learn about the importance of being hydrated and, you know, toxins in Coca-Cola and all that kind of thing, you can almost become evangelical about certain stuff. And I do look back now and go, oh shit, you know, that's a little bit cringeworthy. Is there anything that you look back on and go, oh God, I can't believe I was saying that?
Yeah, like we touched upon, I mean, bashing people for eating bread, that's cringeworthy. Consuming like upwards of 3 grams of protein per kilo of body weight, thinking fat burners were legit.
Yeah.
Honestly, everything, every kind of fitness fad or things that you go, Jesus, I can't believe people actually do that.
Yeah.
I've probably done it in the past.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm still so amazed when you see people like get so emotionally worked up about something that's so insignificant. Like the Diet Coke one, that is one that, if anybody follows me, will know it's a bit of a bugbear of mine, because people get so worked. It's just a tin of juice.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And folk are like, oh no, you can't drink Diet Coke, it's really bad for you. Oh, chemicals, cancer, all this kind of shit that's been shown not to be an issue in humans. Mm. Yet they drink. Right? How many studies, I mean, you know, or they take things like paracetamol, or they drive in a car, or they expose themselves to the sun. All these things
dangerous
are far more lethal at such a lower dose compared to a Diet Coke.
Yet
they're zoning in the Diet Coke and saying, oh no, that's bad for you.
Yeah.
It's mental. Honestly, it's like messed up priorities.
Sure. One of the most profound, one of the most sensible things I've heard all year was from one of my peers, Phil Graham. It was brilliant. He wrote recently wrote the book, The Muscle and Fitness Guide for Diabetics. And he basically said to me, Treggs, the danger is in the dosage. And I thought, you know what? I'm using that now all the time. The danger is in the dosage. And it's like I've put in my article tonight. I'm not telling you now to go out and have 10 Diet Cokes, you know, but you can have the odd one if everything else is dialed in, like your sleep, your water, your training, etc., etc. Drink one a day, as long as everything else is ticked. No problems. Start to drink 10 a day and not any water. That's when the problems is going to arise, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. And the idea as well is just because something has chemicals in it doesn't make it harmful. Like you said, the dose makes the poison. So things like tomatoes have got methanol in it, pears have got formaldehyde, which is used to, you know, embalm dead bodies, apples have got cyanide in them, but again, people aren't going, oh right, I'm not eating these fruits because they're poisonous. It's they're not consuming nearly enough for, well, it's almost physically impossible to consume enough for it to be detrimental. Diet Coke is the same.
Yep, absolutely. Well, it's funny because I remember looking at chemicals in an egg, which is one of the healthiest, and you know, one of the food that we all say, yeah, you got to eat your eggs for proteins and fats, and there's tons of chemicals in an egg. And but back then, I didn't want to know. Anyway, look, right here in front of me, Scott, I've got one of your really interesting infographics that you've been sharing, and I thought I'd pick the one that I saw recently. So you've got like 9 different points on it. I thought this would be excellent to talk about, right? So I'm gonna take you now from left to right with your infogram. Lots of people juicing, all right? Juicing is fantastic for health, vitality, weight loss, etc. On your infographic today, you have put juicing is BS. Tell us why juicing is BS.
So juicing, if you're a fussy eater and you struggle to get a lot of vegetables in your diet, using juices that are predominantly vegetable-based are a way to supplement your diet and get vitamins and fighting nutrients and all that, that's fine. But juicing as a concept, whether it's just to lose weight, so going like on a juice detox, it's BS because it's not sustainable. You're not going to continue just drinking juice when you reach your goal weight. They're not very filling at all. People only do them for a few days and then they're like, right, sack this. And it's this idea of a fad diet, you know, super quick, unpleasant, it won't last. Also, the idea that you need to detox to cleanse your body or purge it of any toxins that have built up is also a total BS, because you've got a liver and you've got kidneys, and there are no diet. There's no evidence at all that suggests you need a special diet to cleanse your body of any.
Let me stop
toxins.
You there. How does that shit, like, because how does it gain so much traction in the industry? Like, why do we take that in? Because we were all probably talking about it at one stage, right? I know I was going on courses about like how to detoxify for fat loss, and I'm looking back going, what?
It's because people want a quick buck, mate. Honestly, it's crazy. Like, all these sort of multi-level marketing schemes that promote juices, and folk are like, God, these are selling for a ridiculous amount for some powdered greens. And then if I can get my mate to sell it as well, I get kickbacks. And it's all, yeah, just MLM nonsense and stuff endorsed by celebrities, which, again, they're not credible. You know, just because somebody's lost a lot of weight doesn't make them a weight loss expert. Like, oh, if you, I heard this example on TV the other day, if you cure yourself, you get rid of the cold, you don't become a doctor.
One mate said to me, I won't say it, but he said, I've shagged a lot of women, it doesn't make me a porn star. I thought that was fucking cracking.
That's an even more X-rated version. But yeah, so yeah. Juicing yeah. is, yeah, not... not legit. Yeah, it's not going to give you long-term yeah. results.
Let me ask you this, right? This is slightly going off topic, but obviously, you know, we know that weight loss comes from being in a calorie deficit. Now, you know, in this day and age, a lot of people sort of say, you know, slow and steady wins the race. But what do you think to aggressive dieting for those that maybe just want a quick fix? Maybe they're going on holiday in 3 weeks and they want that they're prepared to suffer a little bit more, and therefore they might do some kind of juicing thing for 3 weeks. Would you encourage or discourage that if they had something, you know, around the corner and they just wanted to take it to the extreme a little bit more, in the knowledge that they were doing that and had an understanding of how to reset their calories once they sort of reach that new goal target?
Right. People could do whatever they want. It's their decision. If yeah. they want to do it, that's absolutely fine. But I kind of would ask this, what's the point? Like, seriously, what is the point of doing it? Because you're going to suffer for going up into it, you're going to feel horrible,
yeah.
and then once you go on holiday, not only are you going to be, use the example, if you go all-inclusive, there's an abundance of food and free booze, you've deprived yourself for weeks, you're going to go absolutely crazy,
yeah.
and probably put on far more weight than you would have done before. You know, if you've hardly eaten any carbs, and you whack a load of carbs
yeah.
in,
gonna blow up
afterwards. Yeah, you're gonna look bloated. It's just not worth it. Like, I always talk about planning and setting realistic goals. And unless it's like, oh, I just booked that holiday in 3 weeks, again, yeah. it's still like, what's the, who cares? Like,
yeah.
really, what's the point? Why don't you just go on your holiday, enjoy it, come back, and then start embracing some more realistic long term yeah. habits so that come next holiday, you already are in great shape. You don't have to do anything ridiculous to get there.
This is interesting because it takes me on to the next point on the infographic, and this is what stood out quite nicely, and I've not seen anyone really talk about this before, so I really want to sort of spend a bit of time talking about this is, and I really like this, buddy, was the physical hunger versus emotional hunger. Now, I've not made a secret of it. I've had a few issues in the past with overeating, and I actually ended up having some counselling for it, and you track back through your life to see when these little things happen. And it started at a point in my life where I'd actually moved away from, we'd moved away from where I was normally out playing football with my mates every night, moved away, couldn't see them, and got lonely, started just playing on my Atari or whatever it was at the time, you know, in my room and overeating. Now, physical hunger versus emotional hunger. Emotional eating, we know, is a huge thing. Let's talk a little bit more about the difference in symptoms and how to kind of spot if you're in danger of, you know, emotionally overeating.
Right. I want to prefix this as well by saying that I am by no means an expert in emotional eating. There's
right.
people who are
okay.
hugely qualified in this.
Right.
We've spoken about this quite a lot on the podcast, and I've had
right.
other experts do this. But generally, some of the differences, if people obviously haven't seen this infographic, between physical and emotional hunger. So physical hunger, it would build gradually. It's generally going to be below the neck. It's the kind of hunger that goes away once you've eaten. It would come on several hours after a meal. And once you eat, you feel good.
Yeah.
Whereas emotional hunger, that comes on very suddenly. It's above the neck. It could be at any time. Even if you've eaten something, you can still feel it. And often when you eat something as well, if it's emotional, if you've grabbed it, say it's something just to satisfy a craving, like a pack of sweets or a pack of crisps, it can sometimes lead to these feelings of guilt and shame and so on. So you end up getting stuck in this cycle, especially if you're trying to lose weight at the same time.
Yeah.
And you eat something because you're feeling emotional or, you know, you're not hunger, and then you think, oh my goodness, I just ate that because
yeah.
whatever. And then you think, oh wait, I'm trying to lose weight. And you get caught in this cycle. So it's trying to recognize the differences. And making sure that if you're doing what you can to minimize hunger. So yeah, being hungry can be a good thing, and some people talk about this, but for others, when they're hungry, they start making bad decisions and they start ruminating on that, those feelings of hunger. So I'm normally in the camp of trying to minimize it. So I'm talking about people getting, make sure they're consuming protein at most meals, putting lots of fiber in the food, recognizing the difference between hunger and thirst, because sometimes people are like, oh, I'm starving, and then they have a glass of water and they're like, oh, it actually goes away. Other things I've talked about, the Diet Coke can help minimize appetite, going for a walk can suppress appetite, all these different things. And trying to recognize it so you know if it's one or the other.
You talk a little bit, I mean, most guys listening to this will know the importance of protein intake, but this seems to be sort of more and more people are talking about fiber now, right? So what sources of fiber would you encourage men to be eating sort of regularly to keep them satisfied?
Yeah, so you keep satisfied. It's good for digestive health. That makes you, when you go to the bathroom, we're getting some good output there. But yeah, good sources of fiber are going to be your whole grain carbohydrates, so your brown breads, your oats, and so on and so forth, and also your fibrous veg. So your green veg, and then you get fiber in fruit as well, often in the peel of fruits. Berries are also very high in fiber. So, yeah, this, if you combine like high fiber foods with some protein, then you're onto a winner if you're trying to minimize hunger. And that's it. If you often look at people's meals and they say it's like, if they're working in an office or whenever, and they say, I'm really hungry mid-afternoon or mid-morning, say, well, what do you have for your breakfast? Oh, just a couple of pieces of like toast with nothing on it. It's like, well, there's hardly any fiber and there's hardly any protein there. Same with the lunch. What did you have? Oh, I just grabbed a ham sandwich with like a little sliver of protein. White bread. Again, very little
not
fiber.
Not enough volume, is there?
Yeah, exactly. So no wonder they're feeling hungry. So I'm trying to like pad out the plate and talk about this idea of a rule of quarters if you're making a dinner plate or lunch. So divide the plate into quarters. Two quarters will be green veg. Again, you get the fiber and the nutrients there. One quarter will be your proteins, so your chicken, your beef, your fish, whatever. And the final quarter is your carbohydrates, so your potatoes, pasta, couscous, rice, something like that. That's a pretty good model for a balanced plate.
Sure. I think what you're saying is really interesting because, I mean, I think most guys these days are tracking macros. It's something, again, that a couple of years ago I'd have told you there's absolutely no need to track calories. And now I've gone, you know, roundabout turn on that. It's not something I will ram down somebody's throat immediately if I think I can just get them losing weight just by changing a few things in their diet. But at some point, there does come a stage where we start to look at that. And, you know, I've been experimenting a little bit more this week. And one thing I've really tried to do is up my protein. And I've been really upping my protein this week. And I found that, like, I hit my protein target, but my calories were still quite low, if you know what I mean. Because I was literally, I was so satisfied by eating all the protein. And I think I finished coaching the other day, and I was only on about 1,100 calories, which means, you know, I had quite a bit left to play with. So, you know, I enjoyed a feast ice cream and a couple of slices of pizza, and it was great, you know. So I think a lot of people, when they're working in offices, it's important to understand that they're, rather than call it junk food, or because I don't like to label food, but Phil Learney gave me a great saying. He said it's not junk food, it's less nourishing, slightly higher calorie food. And I think that when you're eating...
Does it have the same ring to it?
I know, No, I'm not eating junk, it's just slightly less nourishing, it's higher calorie. But when you do eat whatever you want to call it, you'll be surprised how many more calories you will consume to a point. I mean, I think today, I'm on a rest day today, but I have got a bit of a hunger. I think today I've already consumed, and it's 20 to 4, the calories that I'd consumed by going to bed last night. And it's simply because I haven't focused enough on good quality protein and veg.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things that people, the listener, can do just now to improve the quality of their meals is, have some protein at breakfast, because the research shows that if you have protein at breakfast, you're going to have better appetite control as you go throughout the day. So it seems to be you're making smarter choices with your food. You're not getting these peaks and troughs of absolutely full, really hungry, absolutely full, and so on. So protein at breakfast, we know eggs, natural Greek yogurt, rather than having honey or jam on your toast, put a bit of ham on it, leftover chicken from the fridge, make an omelette. Do a smoothie if you want. It's got some protein or milk in it. You have a glass of milk ever. Just try and get some protein in with your breakfast, because that's probably the main meal that people have that has the least amount of protein in it. But I want to also say that protein isn't this miracle macronutrient. Like, there's this program on that I watched the other day on BBC, like, it was called Addicted to Protein, and some of the people it was just great. They were slamming like 150 grams of protein supplements a day, and you don't need protein supplements. You can get all the amount of protein you need through whole foods. But yeah, protein powders can supplement if you're struggling in it, or if you're working on the road.
What would you say if somebody's just trying to ramp up their protein by maybe 30, 40 grams a day and wanted to do that for a few shakes? You'd have no problem with that as long as you were getting real food in, right?
Well, yeah, if that was their preference. Again, I'm not going to tell anybody how they exactly should be eating, but yeah, again, I try and focus on food first, because you're going to get more nutrients in it, and it's going to be more filling. It's probably going to be cheaper and tastier than having a shake. But I think one of the issues is probably, this will resonate with some of the listeners, is they think, right, I'm trying to build muscle, I need more protein. It's not really as simple as that. It comes down to several things, like, is your training on point? Are you consuming enough total calories? So people think, right, if I take a teaspoon of something, a bucket must be good. You know, protein isn't like that. There is a limit when, once you've gone beyond it, you're still going to digest the rumor that, you can't have 30 grams in a meal. Is not true, but once you hit that threshold, then you're not going to, muscle growth isn't going to be any faster.
I understand what you're saying. Just going back to, you said about breakfast, I'd like to slightly off topic, but I'd like to get your views on what you think about breakfast. You know, a lot of people talk about, is it the most important meal of the day? I have my own views on it, but I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to wait to see what you think about breakfast.
No, it's no more important than any other meal.
Sure.
The myths around breakfast that, if you miss it, then, you go, the next meal you eat is more likely to be stored as fat, or you need it to boost your metabolism. It doesn't matter. Yeah. It's a total preference thing. Like, if you don't have breakfast at the moment and you don't go to work and you're absolutely starving and your concentration is absolutely shot and you grab, a pack of biscuits because you're so hungry, then it's probably a good idea to eat breakfast. If you're training at lunchtime as well, it's probably a good idea to have breakfast. But yeah, it's not this miracle meal. It's all about context and the total amount of food you eat per day.
Exactly. It comes down to total calories in, total calories out. And, for me, I've often said breakfast is just to break a fast. So if you're not hungry at 5 in the morning when you get up for work, don't eat it. But when you are hungry, just make sure you break the fast with some nourishing food, right?
You know it.
Good man. So moving on, this was interesting as well. You put here in your infographic, don't eat anything you can't pronounce is an uneducated way to choose foods. And I like this. It reminded me of, there was a meme going around before, and I did share it, and I apologize profusely. I want to say that now on this podcast. There's too many people counting calories and not enough people counting chemicals. I want to apologize for sharing it in the past. Please forgive me. You've seen that one, right?
I've not, but it's the kind of one that would
you'll find
me to
it. Yeah,
do a counter one.
You'll get that. So there's too many people counting calories and not enough people counting chemicals.
It's terrible.
Yeah, that next one, when you get that infographic out, buddy, you can tag me, all right? So kind of reminding me of that. Don't eat anything you can't produce is an uneducated way to choose foods. And yeah, I've been told that. It's crazy, right?
It's ridiculous. So Ben Carpenter, who's a mate of mine,
Ben's been on the podcast. Great guy. Great guy.
Ripping content. So he did this infographic with different foods on it that, again, his line said, how easily you could pronounce a food has zero relevance to how healthy the food is. I could eat a tin of alphabet spaghetti and shit a more logical statement than that. So,
brilliant.
Love it.
Brilliant stuff. Brilliant. So give me some examples of the food you got there, bud.
We've got quinoa, which is probably the most butchered one, which is like people say quinoa or quinoa and all this. We've got frike or frika, as people call it, and frike, there's quite a few ones. And I always get this one, I'm going to have to think of it. the hot pepper. Sriracha.
Yeah. Salsa, yeah.
Yeah, it's a bitch, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's the bottom line is, If Brilliant. You can't see something, it doesn't mean it's unhealthy.
Exactly. Okay, so look, this is a really interesting one here. You talked about losing weight takes time. And this will resonate so much with so many of our listeners. It's the patient dieter and the impatient dieter. and that is the thing, isn't it? Everyone wants this kind of quick fix. And, you know, I've learned over time that transformation does take time. You can, I've often said this to clients, look, we can have you feeling better within 7 days, as long as you start to listen to what we're telling you and making more informed choices. Doesn't mean you're going to look completely different in 7 days. You might feel completely different, but transformation takes time, right?
Yeah.
And too often people want it too soon, and they're too impatient. So just talk a little bit more about what prompted you to do that little cool infographic there, and just give us some examples.
So, again, this comes down to people being influenced by things you see in the magazines, like lose 6 pounds in 6 days and blah, blah, blah. And you need to realize that there's a difference between losing weight as opposed to losing body fat, and that It doesn't really matter what weight you are unless you're competing in boxing, MMA, weight, something, or you're a jock, you know, something that is weight restricted. Most of the time, people lose weight because, well, they say they lose weight, they're meaning body fat because they want to look leaner. And often people don't realize, or the image they have of themselves in this lean, healthier physique in their mind is often going to be a lot lighter than they actually think it is. Like, you will have experienced working with blokes, and they're like, oh, hang on, I've lost however much weight. I thought I would look leaner by now. You're like, well, you don't realize often how much body fat you're actually carrying.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at people competing in a bodybuilding show for the first time, they're often competing in categories lighter than they expected because they just didn't realize how much they had to go to get super fueled.
So it
takes time. And again, that's why I'm always telling people to focus on the long-term goal. But focus on the process and not the outcome.
Yeah.
So the process is, you're like, right, I'm focusing on what I can do, I'm building healthy routines, I'm making things become normal so that it's not like a diet.
Yeah.
So that once you reach your goal weight, you'll still do the things you did to get there, rather than it being like a diet. We use juicing as an example. Juicing's like a diet because if you do all just juicing detox, you get to a certain weight, you stop juicing, you go back to eating the way you did.
Yeah.
Whereas if you do sensible things like, right, I'm going to start cooking more meals from scratch, I've got protein in the morning, I'm going to swap full sugar juice for diet juice, I'm only got booze at the weekend and so on, you can see yourself continuing to do that once you get there. So that's the thing I'm always trying to tell people. If something, or in terms of sustainability, if you won't do it when you reach your goal weight, there's no much point doing it.
Yeah, it's just a case of, you know, and this is what we'll talk about the whole flexible dieting thing in a second, is that the fact that, you know, you can achieve your goal as long as your, you know, your protein intake is on point and you're in a sustainable calorie deficit, eating a whole variety of foods, and then once you achieve your goal, as long as you adjust your calorie requirements, you can still eat those foods, right?
Exactly. There's no food. The only reason you shouldn't eat a food is if you're allergic to it, you actually have a diagnosed intolerance, you don't like it, it's too expensive, it's not convenient.
Yeah.
You shouldn't just cut a food out because you thought it was quote unquote bad
or unclean,
dirty, or so there's no fat burning foods. There's not a single food that is going to have a meaningful, single food, not food groups, things like, you could argue protein is,
thermic effect,
thermic effect and so on. But there's not like a food like cayenne pepper or, all right, I've got to start.
Bro, hang on. If you tell me that apple cider vinegar does not really burn my body fat, I'm going to lose my shit right now.
Yeah, and conversely, there's no food that is overly obesogenic. You know? So there's nothing like, oh, you can't eat a food because you'll gain weight on it. Like, oh, okay, I've got to cut these common ones. I've got to stop eating bread. Oh, I've got to stop having booze. I can't eat carbs.
Mm.
Nonsense like that. So this all comes down to, there are certain foods that will be more energy dense and less filling and less nutritious and versus other ones. But you can eat anything within reason, so long as it's within your, again, your routine, your preferences, your calorie requirements, nothing should be off limits.
Yeah, I love it. And that brings us on to the whole sort of flexible dieting, buddy. I mean, it's something that I would have laughed at 2 years ago, because I would have thought that you only have to eat super clean to get results. And, you know, look, don't get me wrong. If I'm getting somebody into our programs for the first time, ultimately I am introducing them to what you may call is like a cleaner way of eating. But we're just talking about, I mean, clean being like healthier foods, right? You know, more vegetables, more protein, etc., etc. So they're going to feel more nourished. But I've spoken about this before, but I'll talk about it again. You know, I was the ultra clean eater 5-6 years ago before my kids come along. And it was really easy because there was no temptations in the house. I lived alone. I was your archetypal, you know, youngish guy calling into Tesco's after work, picking up some turkey steaks and some broccoli. There was zero temptation in the house. That was easy. Boom. Then my kids come along. No sleep. Junk in the house. Don't care what any parent says. You do have junk in the house. And it was almost impossible. Well, it was impossible to stay like that. And every time I failed, I would try and start something a little bit more aggressive, you know. So I was the ultra sort of clean eater, failing all the time, feeling guilty. And I just couldn't sustain it. And then obviously when I discovered this whole sort of more flexible approach, I was very resistant to it at first. I was like, what? And what has been really refreshing for me is understanding that I can have the occasional chocolate bar. I can even have a bag of crisps because crisps are my thing. But you see what, Scott, before what would happen is, let's say I was doing ultra clean eating. I'd get to Thursday, cave in, end up having like 8 bags of crisps. Yeah, because I've been depriving myself. Whereas now, if I fancy a bag of crisps, I'll just have them. And I haven't gone off my diet or gone off track. It's just calories. Do you know what I mean? And that's what's so refreshing about it, right? So let's move on to the whole flexible approach. It's obviously something you're a fan of and you use with clients, right?
Yeah. So one thing I'm just going to touch on there that you mentioned it is, sometimes I ask people if the good causes the bad. So they do this whole, oh, I'm really good during the week, I'm eating super clean, and then, yeah, come the weekend, and oh, yeah, it goes downhill. And then you find they've offset any progress they made during the week.
Dude, I like that. If the good causes the bad,
cause the bad? So if they say, yeah, that's me, say, well, rather than being super restrictive during the week, rather than having like a pack of crisps every day or a bar of chocolate in the afternoon just because you're hungry, do it every second day. Do it on days you work out so that come the weekend, you've actually been eating those less nutritious, higher energy dense foods.
Yeah, yeah.
Come the weekend, you don't want to go and have a Domino's, a Chinese takeaway, and you know, a six pack all at once because you've just been eating nothing but chicken, broccoli, and brown rice.
Yeah. So, with this whole flexible approach, obviously, it's only really been kind of mainstream for the last couple of years. So were you like your kind of ultra clean eater when you got into it? What's your history of it?
Yeah, I was, because again, I was just misinformed about exactly what it was. And everybody's thinking like, oh, it's just an excuse to eat Pop-Tarts and all that, which is ridiculous. And now, for anybody who doesn't know exactly what we're talking about, we're talking about flexible dieting. It's the idea that you're tracking your food intake on MyFitnessPal to hit a calorie target. And then if you're going a level beyond that, then you're tracking individual macronutrients, your protein, carbohydrate, and fat.
Yeah.
And you can pick any food you like, really within reason, to hit that target.
It's
super effective and it works. If you look at the research, people who have a more flexible approach to nutrition have a much greater chance of keeping the weight off that they lose as opposed to restrictive dieting. You don't need, like, if someone has a really poor diet and they're drinking, you know, fizzy juice and crisps and getting a meal deal at lunch and they are overweight and they've got, you know, they're not in the best of health, you don't need to suddenly say, right, mate, I want you to start hitting 180 grams of protein, 60 grams of fat, and 220 grams of carbs. Here's your fiber target. Like you said, you can just do simple things like saying, well, can we have more fruit and veg in the diet? Can we, you know, make you start preparing meals in advance? Can we get into an exercise routine? You don't suddenly need to start tracking macros. Tracking macros works well for people if they are already eating predominantly quality food most of the time and they're finding that they're still maybe at a plateau or they're not losing weight at the rate they'd like to. Then we say, okay, start tracking. They go, oh my god, I didn't actually realize that I was eating this little protein, or I was eating far more calories than I thought I was. So it's, do it by stages. You don't suddenly need to start tracking macros.
Yeah.
But
when
you do, it's super effective if you do it right. But one of the biggest things is people just underestimate their intake, or they forget meals, or they put like the eyeball foods, which is again saying, oh, well, I think I had about 50 grams of pasta, and you actually weigh out, you go, that's 100.
Yeah.
Well, you just missed out 300 calories. So,
yeah,
people who say, oh, it doesn't work, or, oh, I did it and I'm on X amount of calories, I'm still not losing weight, it's generally because they're just not doing it properly.
It's called something like calorie underreporting or something. I know Martin McDonald spoke about it a lot, and he says, you know, when you actually get people to write it down, they cannot believe, oh, shit, I had those four biscuits then, or I had that then and that then, it all adds up, you know?
Massively.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you could get some, people will lose, studies show people lose weight if you keep a food diary.
Yeah.
So you can do that. You don't have to, you don't have to weigh anything.
Yeah.
Or try and make any changes, just simply write down what you eat, and then people go, oh my god, I can't believe I'm actually eating that or not eating whatever.
Yeah.
And then that causes them to make positive changes. But yeah, if you look at underreporting is massive.
Yeah.
There have been studies done in dietitians where they've underreported by about 200 calories a day, and there seems to be a trend in that if you are more overweight, you generally are more likely to underestimate your calorie intake and overestimate your energy expenditure, up to underestimating by 50%. So there's been various studies done. People say, oh, I want about 2,000 calories a day. When they've actually been tracked in a lab, they're on about 4,000.
Wow.
Yeah,
it is huge
differences.
I mean, like, you know, MyFitnessPal is obviously extremely popular. I've got some clients using it. So, and do you know what works for me, Scott, currently is a obviously, we've got my Fitbit, which we'll talk about. That's going to be the last topic of discussion today, so I can see what my activity is like. But I just use my calculator because, let's be fair, like Phil Learney said to me, he said, most food you pick up these days, right, you've got to turn it on its side and you'll get all the calories and all the macros. So I literally just add up as I go along. And if I am using my calculator for anything else in the day, like with business related, I'll just make sure I've got a screenshot of my last, you know, input, so I know exactly where I am throughout the day. So, guys, that, you know, if you're not using MyFitnessPal, you don't want to go down that road, then just use a calculator on your phone, right? That can be effective. Would you agree, Scott?
Yeah, and people also have to realize that food labeling isn't exact. You've got about plus or minus 15% either side of what's actually on the label. So say you buy a food that says it's 100 calories, it could be 85 calories, it could be 115. So you're going to get this variance over the course of a day and over the course of a week. So it's like, you know, play the long-term game.
Absolutely. I agree. In fact, when we talk about the Fitbit, I'll talk about why I think maybe the expenditure it gives you on some days is maybe out by a few hundred calories, but we'll talk about that in a second. So look, two more topics I want to talk about. Just clear up some quick myths. I think I've probably done this in the past and a lot of the guys have picked it up, but you know, we're getting new listeners all the time. Things you don't need to do to lose fat. So, fasted cardio.
Yeah. You want me to give you more, or do you want me to talk about fasted cardio?
Just talk about it a little bit.
Okay, so fasted cardio, the idea you're doing typically up in the morning, empty stomach, before you eat, you go and train. It's not any better than training at a later time of the day. It comes down to calories in, calories out. So if you burn 300 calories in the morning, at the end of the day, you burn, say, 300 calories doing cardio then, it's still, you've burned 300 calories from exercise. It doesn't matter at what time of day you do it. There are no real benefits to feeling sick going for a run because you're absolutely starving. Just train at a time that suits you.
One thing I will say though, Scott, in contrast to that, and I totally agree with you, is I wrote an article on it this week and I said, however, just because science says that, you know, fasted cardio isn't what it was meant to be, if you enjoy getting up early and going for a walk, going for a run and getting your exercise done, then who are we to stop you? Because let's face it, a lot of people like getting up early and doing it sets them up mentally for the day, right?
That's fine. I don't disagree. Yeah. Like I said, train at the time that works best for you. So if that's midnight or 5 in the morning, so long as you actually do it, that's the so you can consistently do it. That's the thing. So
yeah. So you don't need a protein shake after training. Interesting one. Talk us through it, buddy. Obviously, I've got my own opinions, but just for the sake of the listeners.
So yeah, you don't have to take protein. Like I said before, you don't have to take protein in the form of a shake at any point. There's nothing really that superior about it that you can't get from food. So if you are training on your lunch break, You don't need to neck a shake. You can go and just have a reasonable sort of 30 to 40 gram serving of protein in your lunch, so like your chicken breast, your fish, or whatever. Same again in the evening. If you're training after work and then you go and have your dinner, as long as there's a decent serving of protein in it, that's fine. If you've got a longer window before you eat, then yeah, a protein shake might be convenient. But yeah, you don't certainly need to neck it within 45 minutes. You've got like hours when you'll get this benefit from it. The better thing is to think about, rather than trying to neck the shake, look at the quality of protein that you're eating. Look at the amount of protein you're consuming in the course of a day. And if you want to go that one step further, it may be beneficial to space out the protein throughout the day. So rather than having just like, you know, a whole chicken at night, you're doing it a bit more evenly, maybe sort of 4 to 5 servings throughout the day.
Yeah, I'm with you, buddy. Okay. So you don't need to take fat burning supplements. I mean, I've been quite open to my followers about this one. I actually, in years gone by, in my ever sort of quest to lose weight, my never ending quest to lose weight, I got quite hooked on ephedrine. They're now banned. They used to suppress my appetite massively. They would increase my performance. I was big into my running at the time. And you know, I've been to extremes, Scott, where I've, so let's say I had a holiday coming up 6 weeks' time. I wanted to drop like 20 pounds fast. I would get on the ephedrine. I'd be wearing bin liners and going for runs first thing in the morning, and not even becoming hungry until later on in the day. So some could say, well, the ephedrine helped me lose weight, but actually in the long term, it led to anxiety, panic attacks and depression. And that was the end, ended up what led me to go down the road of being a personal trainer. So I'm very anti fat burning supplements, but what's your take on them?
Yeah, in terms of legal fat burning supplements, there aren't any that are going to cause significant increases in fat loss. So like green tea extract or raspberry ketones or cayenne pepper or L-carnitine or any of these ones that you see, or even the branded ones that are all sort of all-in-one stuff that the main supplement companies do, none are going to have a significant effect on fat loss. At all, like CLA, that's another one. None of these are going to work at all. The only thing that they're burning is a hole in your wallet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which for us Scottish people is an issue. We certainly want to make sure it doesn't happen. You know how the stereotype is that we are quite conservative with our pounds.
Yeah, I'm with you. And two more things. It says here you don't need to eat 6 times per day. I think that that's quite out there now, but you still get people that are saying that, you know, 6 times per day, to keep the metabolism burning. As a little funny story, I always talk about it, is I once had a friend who, if you'd go out on the piss with him, he'd take a couple of protein bars because he didn't want to go into a catabolic state. I used to find that hilarious.
Yeah,
so you don't need to eat 6 times a day. Tell people, inform people as to why they don't need to do that if they're trying to get fit, healthy, and lose weight.
So again, like we've talked about, your changes in your body composition is going to come down to calories in versus calories out. So say you have one person who is consuming 2,000 calories a day, and they are doing that in 2 meals of 1,000 calories, versus you have another person who's also consuming 2,000 calories a day, they're doing it in 4 meals of 500 calories, and so on. At the end of the day, it's still 2,000 calories. That's the thing. So it doesn't matter really for fat loss, it doesn't matter when you eat, it's all down to preference. Like, you know, what kind of meal frequency minimizes hunger? What makes you be able to train the best in the gym? Which is more realistic and sociable for you and fits in with your family routine and so on? So, yeah, you don't have to eat little and often, because sometimes if you do and you never really get this feelings of satisfaction after a meal. Like, I prefer eating, I eat like 3 meals a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and then I'll put a few snacks in round about training and so on, and to minimize hunger. Because I find if I'm, you know, saying, all right, hang on, I've got to go and have my mid-afternoon meal, then it would have meant I had a smaller lunch, I'll have a smaller dinner. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, preference is key. And the science and the evidence supports this, that meal frequency doesn't really matter.
I mean, one thing I, as somebody that's overeaten and had issues with it in the past, one thing that I found was if I was doing 6 meals a day, that would actually lead me to overeat because I'd be preparing more food and around it more, right?
So, yeah, and it's a pain in the arse if you're like, oh, sorry, mate, I can't go to this meeting because I've got to go and eat my chicken and broccoli.
Yeah, absolutely. And you don't need to avoid carbs after 6 p.m. Again, it was what we were told. It was what we were told when we came in the industry, right?
Yeah, I mean, so that works as a general teaching point. If you said to someone who had a very poor diet, don't eat carbohydrate after six, they're going to say, right, okay, rather than having pasta and garlic bread and a pack of sweets or whatever, ice cream, I'm going to find something else. So I'll have some more protein, or I might have some nuts, or I might drink more water. And then they go, oh my God, I'm losing weight. And say, well, yeah, it's because you're consuming less calories, not because you're not eating carbs after six. Yeah. So it's a means to a result, but it's not. There's nothing more fattening about carbohydrates after six compared to if you had them at 1 or 8 a.m. or whatever.
And I think that, again, some, you know, going to bed hungry, it can be quite difficult, you know, and sometimes, you know, having carbs in the evening will help you sleep a lot better. You go to bed feeling nice and full, and as long as you're not overeating throughout the rest of the day and you're in a calorie deficit, if fat loss is your goal, then it's win-win, right?
God, yeah, I hate going to bed hungry. I always have a decent serving of carbs, like sort of half an hour before I go to bed, and I'll have got some oats or a couple bits of toast with some. I used to have protein as well. I have a serving of protein before I go to bed. Some fruit as well. Yeah, nothing wrong with eating late at night. Again, if it's within your overall calorie requirements.
Yeah, it's good to clear these things up because there's still so many misconceptions out there in the industry, right? It really is. I mean, you know, it might seem common sense to people like myself and yourself because we've done the research, but you're forever meeting people that are just so confused, and you can't blame them. I mean, we were probably preaching the opposite to what we've just said 5-6 years ago, right?
Yeah, exactly. So.
Okay, last thing, Scott. Okay, 5 reasons how a Fitbit can help you lose weight. I love it, dude, right? Well, everyone knows about this. I bought a Fitbit at the start of the year. I am what is known as a Fitbit wanker, and I'm happy I tag everything as Fitbit wanker on my Instagram, and what a fucking revelation these are. What do you think to them, dude?
Yeah, I love them to the extent that I'm trying to partner up with Fitbit to do something.
Dude, me too.
Yeah, I absolutely love them, and just because they just get you more active, and okay, like you touched upon earlier, the calorie estimation part in it is terrible, and
really? They
grossly overestimate what
you're
doing.
So.
But using it as an actual step tracker is, if you just use it for what it's meant to be, then it's really effective for getting you moving. You can set alarms that you have to move every hour, you aim for that 10,000 step target, which again, we're not really sure where it comes from, but it seems to be. You get so much success. Just speaking to people who've got a Fitbit and they say, I'm losing a heap of weight because it's making exercising fun. I'm doing challenges with my mates to work week challenge. And I've got to hit this 10,000 every day. And you find out what they were doing before, it was like 2,000 steps.
Nothing, so
massively ramped it up. And I'm a huge, huge fan.
So let me ask you this. How drastically out do you think they are in terms of what they're telling you your output is daily? Seriously.
So again, it's going to vary on person to person, and I can't remember. I have read the studies on this, but it can be pretty terrible, like hundreds. And you then depend on the level of activity. If you are highly active anyway, then it could be up to some cases I've heard of being like 1,000 out. But that's
really.
But the bottom line is don't use it as a calorie tracker.
Where have you heard that from, buddy? Because I know a lot of people will be listening now going, fuck, me included.
People who work in academia who've worn it and then have been able to actually go into a lab and test their metabolic rate to see what it is.
Right.
So, it's and anecdotally from people as well.
Sure.
But it's one, just don't pay attention to it. It's not really serving any purpose other than just go by the step count. And if you've had a really active day where you've done 15,000 steps as opposed to 10, look at that as a positive rather than saying, oh, I burned 3,200 calories today rather than 2,900 calories. Focus on the steps.
So let me ask you this. What calculation would you actually, if you're not going to use a Fitbit, what would you rely on to actually work out your, without going into a lab, you know, your calorie requirements, your expenditure?
So there's several different formulas that you can use, and it's important to note that they're all called estimation formulas or prediction formulas.
Yeah.
So they're never exact, and it's better to just, you know, you can see what you're eating at the moment, what you're maintaining your weight at if you've got an average routine. But there are different formulas, things called like the Cunningham equation or the Mifflin St. Jour, several ones that you can use. Most of the time, if you just put into Google like calorie calculator or something like this, you'll be able to choose the formula and you'll plug in your height, your weight, your age, and how active you are. And it will give you a rough estimate of your total daily energy expenditure, which is TDEE for short, or maintenance calories. Yeah. And then you can make an adjustment either side. If you're trying to gain weight, then you'd be in a surplus, you want to consume more calories. If you want to lose weight, you need to be in a kind of deficit, meaning you consume less.
Yeah, I'm with you, buddy. Wow, that's an interesting way to end, especially talking about the Fitbits, because we're huge fans at 30 plus. But yeah, I have questioned sometime how out they could be. I mean, for example, yesterday, my stats pretty impressive, even if I do say so myself. I did 40,000 steps yesterday, buddy.
Wow, that's good. My record's 43. It was the highest I've ever been.
Yeah, well, what were you doing that day, dude?
Nine Munros.
Nine Munros? What do you mean?
So Munro in Scotland is a hill over a certain height.
Right.
What's called Munro bagging by trying to get them all. So this is a certain walk that we did when you did a load of them all in one day.
Yeah.
So yeah, I got so many different things for like this amount of stairs climbed.
Nice. And, yeah. Nice, dude. Nice. Yeah, I mean, I did 40,000 yesterday, 30 kilometres, 260 active minutes. It says here I burnt 4,870 calories. Well, I can tell you I probably ate around 2,600 yesterday. So I was in a deficit. Maybe it wasn't a 2,000 calorie deficit, maybe it was 1,000, but it was still a deficit. So I think I'll take that.
Yeah.
Dude, we have been talking for a full hour, considering we've never met in person until we started to talk to each other on Skype. 10 minutes before we started recording. I think this has gone very well.
Yeah, it's been great fun. I really enjoyed it. I hope your listeners got a few things from it and maybe managed to question a few things they might have led to believe in the past, and hopefully it'll result in some improvements, whether it's on their waistline or their health, their energy levels, or their sanity.
Good stuff, bud. So look, just quickly before we finish, what's the future for Scott Baptiste?
Just continue what I'm doing, really.
What you got coming up, dude?
Sorry?
What you got coming up?
We've got a new recipe book coming out. So we do a series of recipe ebooks called the High Protein Handbook.
Yeah.
So we've done the first two. The third High Protein Handbook should be out in August. And then the fourth one is a slow cooker special, which is coming out around November time. Working on that, working on a few other bits and pieces online.
Yeah.
But yeah, if anybody wants to know more or to see some of these recipes, or we talked about these Instagrams graphics and so on, just head on to my website, which is just foodforfitness.co.uk. And or if you want to follow me on any social platform, it's just search for Scott Baptiste. I think I'm like one of the only ones. So Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, just Scott Baptiste.
And what
about
your podcast, dude? What's your podcast called? Because I'll go away and listen to that myself.
Podcast is called the Food for Fitness Podcast, so it's usually in the top 10 on iTunes and the fitness chart. There's been like 700,000 700,000 downloads of it.
Nice.
Each week I interview a new expert who comes on talking about supplementation or fat loss or muscle building or mindset, motivation, all that good stuff. But again, you'll get a link from that if you go onto the website.
Defo. Excellent, buddy. All right, Scott, listen, I can't thank you enough. Stay on the line afterwards because we'll have a little bit of a debrief once I hit stop here, buddy. But guys, I hope you've really enjoyed the last hour and 3 minutes. I've been talking to Scott Baptiste, very affable Scotsman, and hope you've got some real nuggets from that, guys. Scott has obviously told you about where you can find him, so unless you've been living under a rock, go and search for him on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Guys, this has been Coach Treggs from 30 Plus Men's Fitness. I hope you got some value from this. Please leave us a review, a like and a share, and we'll be back very soon with a new episode. Guys, just before I go, make sure to keep following our emails because we are about to launch our new brand new 8-week online program. It's called Fat Dad to Fit Dad. It's going to be a hugely interactive program where you can follow from anywhere. So even if you do go on holiday, you can still train around by the pool. And yes, you can still have a few beers because just like me and Scott have discussed for the last hour, you can fit those things into your diet as long as you understand your calorie requirements. So guys, look out for that. We're going to be launching probably later this week and we begin on Monday the 3rd of July. Guys, that's all from me, Coach Treggs. Scott, big thanks again. And
thank you, mate.
I will talk to you very soon, guys. Keep trucking.